I'm Matt Bush, the news director for Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm speaking with Chris Cooper, political science professor at Western Carolina University, about the new book he co-authored, The Resilience of Southern Identity, Why the South Still Matters in the Minds of Its People. Talk about the stories you were trying to tell in this book. What were you researching, and what were sort of the things you were looking at and the story you wanted to tell with this?
My buddy Gibbs Knotts and I wrote this book. We've been working on it for a while, and I think we're both from the South, and we've frankly kind of struggled with Southern identity. Like, I consider myself a Southerner, but that's not always an easy choice to make. And so I was really interested in this puzzle of why people would possibly choose to identify with a region when it may run counter to some things they believe. And I think a lot of Southerners feel that way.
So what did you research? What were you looking at?
Part of it is why, right? We sort of have this sense that Southern identity may be resilient, which is strange because the world looks more and more alike. If you drive down Merriman Avenue and you drive down some road in LA, they may look pretty similar, but yet people in the South still find a way to connect to the region. So we try to figure out why that is and whether that was true in a world where we would think it would be going away.
So what is it about Southern identity that you think a lot of people don't want to identify with?
You know, I think there, it's taken on this connotation nationally, right, where I think Southerners are perceived in certain ways, maybe as less intelligent sometimes in the national media. I think even if you look at folks like Jon Stewart and when they talk about the South, it tends to be the Dylann Roof South, which is certainly not a South that I or anybody else really wants any part of. And so I think there's a response to that. At the same time, folks are finding a way to connect to the region, to connect to their roots and try to find some individuality. And what we really find is that when folks leave the region, that's often when they actually find their connection. So if somebody moves from the South to New York, that's when they may actually feel more Southern.
So what other ways do they find these connections? The people that stay here, you're talking about the people who leave. So what about people who stay here? How do they find their connections to their identity?
I think they find it in some ways that may seem pretty ordinary to us, like food, for example. I mean, if you were to go to Tupelo Honey, I mean, this is an explicitly Southern menu. And I think that means something to people. And I think what's interesting is this cuts across racial lines. So we actually find that Southern blacks and Southern whites share more food choices in common than whites in the South and whites in the North. So food, culture, there's sort of a kind of the folk ways or ways we connect to people in the South. And I think that really matters for how we practice our politics and how we interact with people on a daily basis.
To go off of that, how does Southern identity affect how politics are done in the South?
I think politics in the South are a little bit different, right? I think if you follow a campaign here and then you follow a campaign in Pennsylvania, you're going to see politicians respond to their constituents differently, right? We call this their home style, how a member of Congress or a state legislator talks to the people at home. And it makes sense that they would then respond to those folks differently. At the same time, there's this negative way it can be used. We call this the dark side of Southern identity, right? So folks that are appealing to an explicitly racist or exclusionary agenda sometimes is used, you know, you think of a guy like David Duke, who obviously wears his Southern identity like a badge to oppress rather than to lift up.
How much has it changed over the years?
It's changed less than we would have thought and that I would have thought. We catalog that in a few different ways. We have a bunch of survey data where we call thousands of people and just ask them questions. We look at business names, for example. So we say, hey, how often do you say the word Southern versus say the word Dixie in your business name? We also do a lot of focus groups with folks. We actually just sat down with dozens of black and white Southerners alike and ask them questions about the South. And what we find is there is a resilient Southern identity, even in a world in which you would think it would be disappearing.
You see differences between each state in the South? Because obviously North Carolina is different than South Carolina, and Georgia and Virginia are different. So what differences do you see by state?
Yeah, I think there are some significant differences between states, right? I think we talk about Virginia and certainly Northern Virginia and the population centers, and Florida perhaps being very, very different than the rest of the South. And a place like Oklahoma may feel pretty Southern, even though it wasn't traditionally considered a Southern state. So yeah, I think we're really seeing two or three different Souths rather than one South.
And how has a lot of the migration of people from the North, Yankees like myself coming here, how has that affected this?
I think, so we talk about assimilated Southerners, right? So if somebody moves down here from Maryland and then after a while they sort of discover that they like the South, they're taking on certain parts of Southern identity, we call them assimilated Southerners. I think the biggest change in this has really been the African-American remigration back to the South, right? So we used to see in the 1970s that white Southerners were much more likely to claim to be Southern and to like the South than African-American Southerners. We've actually seen a flip of that. Today, African-American Southerners are slightly more likely to identify with the South than white Southerners. And so I think that's been a real shift in migration.
Just to go on the migration, that's sort of opposite of what's happened in Western North Carolina, because the black population here is slowly moving out.
Yes.
So from what you've seen.
Yep.
So where is this remigration taking place and what areas?
I think it's taking place mostly in urban areas. So Atlanta obviously has been sort of a center of where this movement's happening. I think places like Charlotte, places like Raleigh, places like Columbia, South Carolina, even Jackson, Mississippi, I think you've seen this kind of movement. Western North Carolina does feel a little bit different in some ways. Western North Carolina is a mix of Southern and Appalachian and maybe something else.
We'll finish with this. What effect does this have on our current state of politics, not just in North Carolina, not just in Asheville or Buncombe County or Western North Carolina, but the state of North Carolina and the U.S.?
I think it has a large one, right? I think that folks connect in lots of different ways to their environment, right? So if we have this big national media environment, but yet people still find a way to listen to WCQS and they listen to local stations and they watch local stations and they consume local media and they talk to people in their neighborhoods, I think in some ways it's a reminder that localism still matters even in what appears to be an increasingly interconnected world.
That's Chris Cooper, political science professor at Western Carolina University, discussing a new book which he co-authored, The Resilience of Southern Identity, Why the South Still Matters in the Minds of Its People.